Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Pro Advocate Radio, brought to you by My Advocate Center.
Hi, this is Deb Beecham with My Advocate Center, sponsor and co-host of Pro Advocate Radio. Good morning. We have a great show today with one of our family court advocates and divorce coach, Jennifer Weddell. And we also have Dr. Rebecca Housel. Good morning. Thank you both for being here.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Pro Advocate Radio, when we decided the beginning of this year, January 2015, to start putting messages out to the universe, really the vision was lifting up good professionals who really want to make a difference, who genuinely care, who have high integrity, who are committed to adding value to their clients. And I'm so glad that Jennifer could be here today, because when I came across her, I was so excited. Jennifer is a paralegal, and I'm going to explain a little bit more about her. But Dr. Rebecca, you'll appreciate this. She, she's just really devoted herself to service and does a great job for the attorneys that she works with as a freelance paralegal. But she also uses her spare time as an advocate helping with reform. So, and I get a lot of great feedback from her about what's going on out in the community and around the state and around the country, because we're both networking with people around the country over how we can drive change and make the court safer, help families resolve conflict in healthier ways so they can move on with their lives with their children. So Jennifer is one of these people who just stands out and does an amazing job. And I'm so proud to know you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And thank you for making the drive in here to Atlanta. So we're right in the heart of Atlanta in Buckhead and in the Business Radio X studio, which is important because we often talk about divorce and child custody as a business, but that's not how we as consumers think of it. We think of, you know, the system is here to protect and serve us, but really it's a business. And getting to know, just like any industry or anything that you as a consumer engage in, you really want to understand what the people are like that you're trusting. It's not just about trusting with the money that you're spending, but trusting with your life and the lives of your children. So Jennifer and a number of the professionals that she works with stand out, and that's the kind of example that we need to uplift. And that's part of the purpose of Pro Advocate Radio, is to uplift the voices of professionals like Jennifer. So let's see, we have a little information. So you have 8 years experience.
Yes, that's correct.
As a freelance paralegal, and you're also a process server. So you work with a number of family law attorneys in our community, and you've assisted divorce and custody issues by coaching, working as a trial assistant. So, and I know that's very valuable to a lot of these, especially solo practitioners.
Yes, absolutely.
Need someone who's very good on your feet in the courtroom, understands all the dynamics in the courtroom, but coaching and educating parents on what the process is like.
Yes, it takes a lot of pressure off of the attorney so that they can focus on what they do best.
Yeah, that's great. So you're also a notary public in Georgia.
Yes.
And have a degree in human resources management and certification. Looks like you've done quite a bit of certification, different areas, investigations, paralegal studies, and extensive training in leadership, which I've been able to pick up on over the months and months that we've been talking, because you are a leader in what you do. So I want to acknowledge you for that. You also completed the CASA for Children training program.
Yes.
So I'd love to hear more about that. And you've spoken at the local Bar Association Family Law Division on parental alienation, which is a big topic that we see a lot, and it's kind of a hot button on just in general, but especially on social media, people are trying to understand what it is, what it's not. So we can get into that a little bit later. But why don't you tell our audience a little bit more about yourself, what you do, how you help make a difference for families.
I am working with Divorce Corp's Family Law Reform Committee for parental alienation, and I'm working with two other leaders where we are working on setting goals and objectives to help drive reform in the area of parental alienation, some including mental health in regards to custody disputes.
Yeah, mental health is obviously a big, big factor in these child custody disputes. So, and that plays a huge role in the alienation topic. And by alienation, we mean parents undermining the other parent, doing things to block their relationship. It basically causes a lot more stress for the child and is really a big form of abuse that we don't often talk about it as abuse, but it is.
Yes, yes. It used to be referred to as hostile aggressive parenting. It's been referred to as brainwashing in a more informal sense. Recently, the American Psychology Association did an update to the DSM-5 category. Okay. Regarding diagnoses of children related to parental alienation.
I didn't realize they had that on the DSM.
Yes, they don't actually use the term.
Okay.
But they did make some changes that do support the damage that's done on children when those things happen during separations and divorces.
Okay, that's good. That's a big topic. We need to do a show just on that.
Yes.
And have a round table of men and women and different situations. So we'll definitely plan on that. One of the things I like about you is that you're not focused on the win-lose, black and white, one parent needs to prevail at the expense of the other. It's, you know, you're a parent yourself.
Yes.
So you understand that the needs of the children have to come first and that kids deserve, and this is the phrase that I like to use, is best of both parents. So whatever type of shared parenting or co-parenting arrangement you're working for, joint custody, you know, there's all different forms of joint custody, but the purpose needs to be that kids have the best that each parent is available for and able to give. And sometimes that changes. And we always want it to change for the better. So if we have professionals involved in the case who are supporting positive change, then that makes all the difference for the family. So, and that was one of the things that drew me to you. It's just your positive, uplifting attitude and the way you work.
Yes, yes. I was divorced in 2002. I share one daughter who'll be 17 tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And we have a great relationship.
That's fantastic.
And she's always been first, and we've usually done 50-50 type visitation type plan. Uh-huh. She's 4.0 student. She's graduating next year. She's been excelling in a lot of things that she's done.
So you're leading by example.
I hope so, yes. Yes.
Well, good for you. You sound like a great mom.
Yes.
And a great co-parent.
She's a great kid, yes.
Good. Happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, almost into that transition into college.
Yes, we've been co-parenting since she was about, when she started kindergarten.
Okay, great.
So.
Yeah, so there are, and that's something that we need to spell out on the website and talk about in social media, and that it is possible. We need to point at more success stories and show people the path to follow for this to happen instead of just talking about everything that's wrong and broken and so sad and traumatic. You know, it doesn't have to be that way, but you need some determination and willpower, right? Because I'm sure it's not always easy.
No, it's not. But you have to really, truly put your child first, you know, separate from any other feelings that you have about that other parent. Yeah. And like you said, it is about the strengths that each parent has that they can bring to the table.
Yes.
And support each other for the best interest of the child.
Yeah. So while we're talking about you as an expert and leader, you're outside of Atlanta, about an hour outside of Atlanta, but you can work remotely, virtually, or do you work mostly with area attorneys?
Yes, I do help attorneys. Mostly in northeast area of Atlanta.
Okay.
But I have helped in other counties.
Okay. So for our listeners, especially our attorneys, because you work with attorneys, correct?
Yes.
And not with pro se litigants?
Only with pro se litigants if it's a helping them get prepared for a consultation with an attorney, what kind of questions to ask to help them get the most out of their time with that attorney.
That's important.
Which
that's
is a win-win situation for the attorney as well as the client, potential client.
Yeah, if you help an attorney have a better client and have the client have less anxiety, be more prepared, you know, have a little more certainty in the picture, that adds value all the way around. So, and you, the term for that would be divorce coach?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's something we can all get our head around.
Yes.
So if you're looking for a divorce coach, or if you're a professional looking for someone to help you with case management, paralegal work, other types of support team work, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
You can send me an email at jdw-associates@comcast.net or my cell phone 404-932-8578.
Okay, and we'll post that on the page. So glad to have you here. And we also have Dr. Rebecca Housel. Rebecca, I am so pleased to meet you.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you
for
having
me. I feel like I've known you for a long time. And we
I know,
this is funny. I met both of you through social media. And Jennifer, we connected because of our interest in family court reform and, you know, working with ethical professionals and seeing the best outcomes for families. And Rebecca, when we were on social media talking about inspiration and uplifting people going
positive
through
energy.
Tough times, positive, yes, hashtag positive energy. That's Dr. Housel. And your other hashtag is
The pop culture professor.
The pop culture professor. So we're going to have some fun with that. So you live, Rebecca, you live in three different cities. You travel a lot?
Yeah, I do. I have a home base in Atlanta, one in New York, in upstate New York, and one in L.A.
Wow. I'm jealous, I think.
It's really nothing to be jealous of. It's a lot of money that's really unnecessary, but
yeah, but
better
there are
than hotels.
Three great cities, yes, absolutely. So, all right, so let me tell our audience a little bit about Dr. Rebecca Housel. She's known as the pop culture professor, as we said. She has over 11 books published in 9 languages and in 30 countries. So when I stopped and took a look at your profile when we were chatting on Twitter, I said, oh my gosh, like
I'm old.
No, you're not old. You're accomplished. So Dr. Housel's been a professor for 20 years, most recently for the Chattahoochee Technical College, which is great. She's best known for her work as a national Comic Con speaker and entertainer, connecting our theological past with our present pop culture. I'm fascinated. I want to hear more about this. And for our listeners, if you go to RebeccaHousel.com, go online and check out this image she has on her homepage, and then let us know what you think. It's great. So tell me about, you know, just whatever comes to mind first, but, you know, pop culture, theological past.
Well, one of the shows that I do for Comic-Con that I'm probably best known for is called Vampire Myth and Supernatural Superhero Legend. And it's really the history of pop culture, beginning with the first written evidence in human history of a vampire who was actually a god, a Hindu goddess named Kali. And so it starts there, and going forward, vampires are the first sort of superhero, actually. So it's like a very interesting, it's something that I almost always opened Comic-Con with.
Uh-huh.
And then another show was requested for Joss Whedon. I don't know if anybody here knows Joss Whedon's work, Firefly, Buffy, Angel.
No, this is a whole new world for me.
He probably is the reason that we will have a female president in our lifetime.
Oh, wow.
He's
okay.
Written women into popular culture as powerful figures.
That it makes, you know, we don't think about how few female actors and roles and it just, and somebody has to focus on that.
Right.
Right?
He has a history of it, a family history. His grandfather was the person who wrote the Donna Reed show in the 50s when women were not, you know, leaders at all. And there was a whole show focused on a woman because of his grandfather. And
oh,
then
wow.
His father did the Golden Girls. He also did Benson. His father, you know, created those shows. And Benson, of course, the first show featuring an African-American man who wasn't poor, you know what I mean?
Right.
Who wasn't like owned a garbage yard or something, you know, like some, you know, it was like he was smart and smarter than all the white people that, you know, were in the show. So it was fantastic. They're a family of really proactive, similar to what you do here. They really like to raise people up, the other, you know, whoever the other might be, they raise us up. And Joss Whedon is also infamous for having one of the very first lesbian kisses on television. So, you know, I mean it when I say he raises the other up.
Yeah, he raises the other up. You need to open the door and have conversations about what's going on in the real world. And instead of polarizing, you know, maybe try to understand.
Right.
And say, you know what, you're a smart person. You're a high integrity, high character person. Why don't we talk and put our heads together to solve problems instead of focusing on what's different about each other? And so whether it's race, gender, lifestyle, you know, politics, faith, you know, we need to, you know, reach out on Twitter and touch each other.
Well, that's what pop culture is, sort of opens doors for that sort of thing. And that's really why I got into it as a professor at a technical college, university, I should say, that had mostly engineers. And I'm a writing professor and nobody wanted to write. Why should they? They're engineers. They don't need writing. It was a required course. We were a service department. And so I said, oh, hey, how about if we write about something like comic books and movies and superheroes, which I liked anyway, you know? And hey, let's maybe get some vampires in there. Let's get some violence going. Let's get something, you know, the fictional violence, of course. Real life, it's not so hot. But so that's how it started for me. That's when I really became the pop culture professor. Started writing books in a series called the Philosophy and Pop Culture Series. It's edited by my friend William Irwin, who's the father of, there's many of those series now with many different publishers, but he was the first, the original.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I mean, you have such a different background and are doing things that I've never heard of anybody doing. And I said, I have to have her on the show. But you're an advocate for people. You inspire with your writing and speaking, and you travel and do some wonderful events. And what you said, your average event size is how many people?
Well, it depends. The Comic Cons themselves, like say Chicago, for example, which is coming up in August in a few weeks, that's about, I think it's now around 75,000 people. They're not all in my audience.
Right.
But there'll be 1,500 people in an audience, depending on what I'm doing. And next year, we are starting a tour, a pop culture icon tour, and we are selling 4,000 people venues, person venues,
I should say. That's impressive. That's great.
Well, that's the start, I hope, for stadiums.
Right. But this is, I mean, people want to hear, you know, this is, it's interesting, it's fascinating, it's an escape from reality, you know, and some people just, I mean, grew up with comic books and superheroes and other world. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just part of your makeup sometimes. And, you know, some people are into sewing, some people are into comic books. No, that was terrible. So no, but I mean, it's, you have quite a following and I can see why. And so that when I started reading about you, I was just excited to meet you. And so tell us a little bit more about Comic-Con.
Comic-Con is this really, it's really well known for San Diego Comic-Con, which people say Comic-Con, I actually haven't worked San Diego Comic-Con since 2003. There's over 150,000 people at that event that they declare. It's probably more. And it's spread all over the city of San Diego in different venues. And it's so large. One woman got killed one year.
Oh, no.
Hit by a car waiting for Harry Potter tickets. That was a year that the last movie was premiering. And it was too many people for me. I worked for a company. I was on tour with a company called Wizard World out of L.A.
Uh-huh.
And they have it all encompassed in one sort of convention center. And this year alone, they had 24 different cities that they were in. So they really are sort of the, you know, organizers of pop culture events now. They are the main Comic-Con people. Their Chicago event like I said, last year had 75,000 people.
Jeez, that's crazy. So, of course, we're here in Atlanta, and we have Dragon Con.
Yeah. So Rachel is a friend of mine, Rachel Reeves.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. That's if you've, have you, Rich, have you been to Dragon Con?
I've seen it on TV,
it's
about the extent of it.
It's pretty wild. So we'll just remind our listeners, you're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with Deb Beacham, founder and director of My Advocate Center, and our guest Jennifer Waddell, a divorce coach and paralegal, and Dr. Rebecca Housel talking about some pretty incredible other world things with Comic-Con and, I wasn't sure whether to envision a vampire or, you know, cult-like, you know, because the sense that I get is, you know, this is entertainment, mm-hmm. it's good, clean fun, mm-hmm. it's time to dress up and be silly, talk about your favorite characters and their characteristics, their traits, and the stories are pretty amazing.
That's so, right. Yeah, and the story is I'm a literature person. I studied 15,000 years worth of world literatures, you know, so that's where it all sort of comes from for me. And also a social theorist who focuses on women's issues, gender equality things, queer theory, so that I can encompass the sort of postmodern impact of pop culture. It's we are all sitting here right now, and before we started, we silenced our phones, our smartphones, our iPhones. The I stands for individual. That's the key word for postmodernism. Individuals became so important that, in fact, we spend thousands upon thousands of dollars on personal electronics per individual. So that's sort of the ultimate sort of example I can give you for what postmodern is, while modernism was sort of what Hitler took and perverted in like the most horrible way possible, where there was just one solution for everybody.
Right.
The greater good aspect, which sounds good, like socialism, it sounds great, but in practice, not always so terrific. So that's ultimately, after 1950, after World War II, we switched gears. Our social, our cultural shift switched to this postmodern individual focus. And
I was never taught that, and this is a very important point to learn. I mean, this is, you know,
it's
very relevant.
It is, because it led to things like women's liberation and the civil rights movement, and not just iPhones and electronics, but it led to major social movements, and it filtered in through pop culture. Things like comic books, for example, Marvel Comics started in 1962, and X-Men is a comic book about humans who are mutants, who are different than everybody else, but yet they save the people that persecute them. That was about a year after the Eichmann trials for the Holocaust. And,
wow.
And that's something that the X-Men are Jews. In fact, Magneto, I mean, that's what they are. Superman was created, and Stan Lee is Jewish. Jack Kirby is Jacob Kurtzberg, Jewish. All like comics and Jews go hand in hand. And so that's really kind of where that all sort of comes from. So pop culture isn't just for good times. It actually reflects our cultural attitude and where we're headed in the future.
I knew we were going to learn a lot from you. Did you know any of this, Rich?
I had some inkling. I did see a documentary recently about that Superman of the creation or whatever, but I didn't realize Marvel Comics was that late onto the scene. I thought what was the precursor to Marvel?
Timely Comics. Martin Goodman started Timely Comics, and Stan Lee worked for Martin Goodman. They were relatives.
Yeah.
He like swept floors. And their first issue for Timely Comics was called Marvel Number One. That's why when Stan took over as editor, it became Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
I can't wait to introduce my son to some of your writing.
Oh.
I think he's going to be excited.
Oh, he'd like it.
This is really cool stuff. So when I'm watching you on social media, I'm picking up some of this, but I'm getting a lot of inspiration.
Oh, good.
And a strong sense of advocacy. Mm. And so tell me a little bit more about your persona on social media and how you engage with people.
I find it difficult to balance this because I like to uplift people. You know, I like to be uplifted, and I want to make sure everybody feels like they're not alone. I think that's the number one thing human
not
beings
alone.
Crave
yes.
is acknowledgement. And to, you know, when someone favorites on say something like Twitter, most people just ignore it. I rarely, if I ignore it, it's unintentional. It's never willful. I want to make sure I acknowledge people, as many people as I can, but it does sort of clash a little bit with the comedian persona, the entertainer persona, which, you know, is known to be terribly dirty, for example, horribly, like, very sexual and dirty on stage. And, you know, there's like, oh, I'm a comedian. That's kind of what we do, really. Ultimately, that's really what I am. That's how I started when I was 19 at Nick's Comedy Stop. I actually had a 20th anniversary show in 2000. That's how old I am. I know. It's terrible, but also terrific. So that's sort of, you know, it's difficult sometimes because I'll have like a radio interview on something like a podcast called The Freak Show. So it's a little shout out, I guess, to them. And, you know, it's, I wouldn't want my 13-year-old, like, I wouldn't want anybody, like, say, under 21 really to listen to that. But then on social media, like, as a human being, I've been the underdog my entire life. So if anything you can imagine bad happening to a person, it's happened to me. To a woman, it's happened to me. So, but you can overcome anything. You literally can. You just have to have the willpower and people around you to give you the positive energy you need.
And that radiates from your posts.
It's good.
And that's,
I'm glad.
Yeah, that's why we connected, because I could feel the empathy. I could see how you were treating other people. And, you know, our friend Ashley,
writer.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Her little boy is sick and she couldn't make it here this morning. So she said to tell you hello, but we'll get you together. And, but yeah, you made such a great positive impact for her right as she's making her debut on social media. And, so anyway, we had quite a few days of getting
we
to
did.
Know each other.
It was
fun.
Great.
So I want to encourage everyone to do that. Connect with Dr. Rebecca Housel. Connect with Jennifer Waddell. Connect with us on Pro Advocate Radio, on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and get to know people. It's not just about how many likes or favorites you have. It's the relationships that you build, even though that's why it's social media. You really make me stop and think.
Oh, that's good.
It is good.
I should do that. I'm a professor.
Yes.
That's my job.
Yeah, so I appreciate your role, as a professional and on social media. And
well, I appreciate what you're doing here
with
your group. I mean, I had personal experience with this when I was younger. And so when I saw that this was local to Atlanta, frankly, I fell in love with the South about 9 months before I moved here, which was over a year ago now. And this is my home. Even though I was born in Boston and lived in New York for both, I think, over 20 years in both places, I came here and it's home.
Oh, that's great.
You know, I'll drive because I love to drive through like Tennessee, Kentucky and Tennessee. As soon as I see the mountains and the crosses, and I'm Jewish, by the way, so I feel like the South, it's not about religion so much as it is about faith.
Right.
I find people will say have a blessed day here unapologetically, and I love it. People will tell me don't worry about whatever bad thing is happening because there's a plan. I love that. I think that's true. It's totally true, and it's regardless of religion. It's about the faith. People here believe in something bigger than themselves, and I think that's why they're generally nicer people. Not just about the gun laws.
Well said. Just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with your host, Deb Beecham. And also we're speaking with Jennifer Waddell, divorce coach and family court advocate. And also on the show joining us today is Dr. Rebecca Housel, pop culture expert and author, on stage personality, and ..
So, Rich, what do you think? How diverse is this?
This is a very unique show. I don't think you could have scheduled this.
It just worked out because all three of us are advocates. We just happen to be three women. We have as many men out there advocating for fathers and mothers and to stop domestic violence and to support children. I mean, we have a great community of people around us, and we've had some fantastic shows. And James O'Brien wishes he could be here. He was needed to host a show at his radio station. So hopefully you'll get to meet him the next time around. But the world is a really good place. And especially if you acknowledge the people around you who have strong character and who use their time and talent to help others. So, and I appreciated all the things that you've done and said to support My Advocate Center Online. Thank you.
I want to keep doing it. I mean, I hope I can book a date in Atlanta. It wasn't a plan, but now because of you, because of your center, I want to make it a plan. I want to come here, and every city we go to, we want to leave better than when we came. So, you know, we'll be donating $1 per ticket and matching that dollar, I think.
Wow, fantastic.
So, yeah, so we're hopeful that we can leave the place $10,000 better than when we, instead of just taking people's money. Right. I mean, you're giving them entertainment, but it's not, I want to give more than that.
No, that's a great example, and thank you.
Thank you.
Love that. So I'd love to have you back and talk a little bit more about domestic violence and some kind of tough issues. And that's, you know, part of the purpose of having a show dedicated to advocacy is right. We can talk about the tough issues and talk about the solutions and feature the professionals and programs that are making a difference. So, you know, we had Senator Renee Unterman on talking about child trafficking and, I mean, a number of different policy issues, but that was a tough show.
I bet that was.
It was. And we'll have a lot. We're going to be heading into the legislative session again before we know it. And, you know, we have a lot of work to do here in Georgia and across the country. And I want to point out that, yes, we're here in Georgia, but the issues that we're talking about affect every state. Every community is dealing with strife and conflict in families, at homes. People are struggling to maintain their homes. Stress at work, they bring it home, and it affects the children. So we want to provide more positive messaging for people to cling to and more professionals for them to reach out to resolve conflict at home. And if you have to go through a process that engages the court system, learn before you enter the process and find the best people for your situation. And I believe that that'll lead us to a more peaceful community over time. You know, we want to see fewer families break up. Ultimately, we want to see more stability for families and children. And we want to see better responses to addiction, to violence. I'm going to just touch on this right now because there's so many cases coming through all the time where there's false allegations of violence. So I think the point that I really want to stress is if you are tempted to make a false claim, or if you are being encouraged to use false claims of child abuse or violence to get leverage in litigation or leverage financially, please don't do it. And if you are not sure how to handle a situation and if you feel like that's your best option is to make up something about the other party, please reach out to us and let us know and let us help you through that, because it will only end badly. Things go from bad to worse when people lie about each other and involve the police where the police don't need to be involved. It's a wicked cycle that's very hard to break. And the other thing that happens, and you know, we're women here sitting here talking about this, when you have experienced real violence and you have to engage with the court system and the police and you're turned away or ignored or they don't believe you, why don't they believe you? Because so many people have cried wolf and abused the system and abused the resources. These are taxpayer resources that you're wasting when you engage the police to try to fault someone who's innocent. And I see it all the time. Jennifer, I'm sure you see it plenty.
Yes, absolutely. So, whether it's involving the Department of Family and Children's Services, child welfare checks as an abusive a way to harass the other parent when they have the children in their custody. I've seen a lot of that going on. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then
so
the ones that do have a legitimate situation going on, whether it be emotional abuse, physical abuse of either the spouse or even the children, they're being turned away.
It's very hard to get help when you really need it. And so we're here to help everyone that we can possibly reach, you know, whether it's on the phone, email, if you come through the website, but just read the material on the website, reach out to Jennifer, reach out to maybe the YWCA, for example. They have great resources for domestic violence. There are resources, and if you're not sure whether to report violence or not, or if you're not sure, you know, is it bad enough for me to ask for help, or is anybody going to consider this violence? If you're struggling, reach out and ask for help. Don't worry about what you're calling it, mm-hmm. You know, or don't worry about what the other party or side is going to respond to. Just ask for the help that you need, and it may be more accessible than you think. So that's my lesson for today.
And just real quick, for that, that material is on site is at myadvocatecenter.com.
Thank you, Rich.
Okay. I did have a quick question for Jennifer. So when you engage with a individual or couple in terms of, coaching them before they meet with their attorney, what's on kind of your short list? What do you hope to accomplish before they sit down with an attorney, or what are some challenges challenges that folks have?
A lot of times they will go into a consultation. Typically they're about an hour. Either okay. They're a free consultation or they have to pay for it. And it's a lot of emotion. It's very emotional, obviously, when people first separate. You have a hard time thinking completely clear. And
so you help kind of guide them and kind of rein some of that in?
Business relationship type. Ask the questions that they need to ask about what their needs are. If asking questions about the attorney's experience, if they've had any experience with family law cases, and any even judges or particular circuits and counties of where they the case will be.
That can be a game changer of who they decide to align themselves with, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Are you in a position where you can advise one attorney or judge over the other, or is that...
Well, one of my disclaimers is I am not an attorney, and I don't have a license to law at all. So I do tell, everybody knows that. But a lot of times the attorneys will have those discussions about particular judges and those kind of things and what they're picky about, depending on the situation. But basically they tend to use a lot of the time with all the emotional stuff complaining and this isn't fair, or this is how I was done wrong, and those kinds of things.
That can be expensive if you're meeting with an attorney by the hour, right?
Yes. And after a 2-year-long contested custody case, it could get up there. I've seen $20,000-$30,000 easy.
Yeah. Something that we talk a lot about is building case studies to use for education, so people can see what's happened in other situations that might mirror their own.
Right, yeah.
And sometimes when you read about somebody else's story, and it may be, that it's information's redacted out, but you're looking at a real case,
right,
and you can see the outcome and go, oh my gosh, if they had just figured that out, because that's so simple.
And to what we're in right now, it's like the crystal ball, right? So if you could see in the future, here's a similar case, let's not go down that road, right?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
To avoid those traps.
Yeah, we want to see more people resolve things in the first 3 to 6 months instead of dragging it out for 18 months, 2-3 years. And, it's a win-win for everybody, unless you're just going to change. Some people like to drag out litigation because it's their best way to get back at the other person for filing for divorce or not giving them what they wanted. I mean, there's all kinds of factors going into it. But as many people as we can help, that's what our goal is. It doesn't mean that it's got to be, we don't live in a perfect world. And we're not perfect. We don't hold ourselves out as perfect, but we can still make a difference. And some people, for me, if I feel like I help a handful of people per month or quarter or year, those are people who are going to be better parents. They're going to be better at their jobs. Their health will be better. And making a difference for a handful of people is better than none at all. So, and speaking of which, we have a page on the website called Report Cases. Mm-hmm. If you go to our Contact Us tab and hover over that, you can ask for general help. And if you're a professional, please reach out and let us know more about you. Use that Contact Us form. But if you have a case or situation that you need a second opinion, if you're not sure of what's going on, or it's after your case is over and you want to report what happened, use that form. It's very detailed because we are all students of this process ourselves and constantly looking for ways to make it better. So having information from previous cases does help all of us. In fact, I share a lot of that information with attorneys, legislators, law enforcement, because with a 50% divorce rate around our country, and I think Georgia has something like 30,000, that's a pretty big impact. So if we can improve the process and these outcomes, even 10% per year or over a 10, 15 year period of time, that's,
it's a lot of people. Yeah.
Right. So, let's see, what else is on our list to talk about today as I get all serious?
I'd like to know a little bit, Rebecca, these books that you've written, 11 of them, you mentioned they're kind of in a series or started, are they all in the series then? Well,
four of them are. Okay. Five of them are a middle grade fiction series that I wrote for adult literacy. But it's at a second grade readability level. So I think that it was used. It's a company out of Novato, California, and called the High Sea Series. When I was doing my master's, I was into 19th century whaling literature. So I started writing about that stuff. That was actually my first published work.
So, what are some of the titles and who's the audience and where can they be found and all that good stuff?
Well, all of my books can be found anywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. They're sold. Okay. The Pop Culture and Philosophy series is sold literally around the world. And I think that we even have China. We even have China.
Wow.
It was a huge market. I was so excited. I was like, a billion possible readers.
Right, exactly.
What? So, so that's one of the books, Twilight and Philosophy, is very, very popular and a huge seller because of Twilight. Yeah. That phenomenon and what we try to do is actually we have a whole chapter that I wrote about Edward and how he's a stalker, basically, and how he, initiates this young girl into a cult, essentially, in the movie. And now all these 9, 10, 13, all these different age girls are growing up with this book series thinking that this is their guy. And then they're going to be sitting here with Jennifer, 10 years, 15 right. years later, because they find their Edward. And in real life, the guy who comes through an unsecured window and watches you sleep at night is not the guy you want to marry or have babies with.
That's right. There is so much we can talk about here.
But in 9 languages, that's got to be amazing when you see those come out. And
I love it.
Right?
It's so awesome. Russian, Polish, Portuguese, German, Italian, French. We're all over Europe. It's fantastic because the only place that we're not in is the Middle East, which makes me sad because I actually speak multiple Middle Eastern languages. So I really want to make that happen. But it's an audience thing.
Yeah.
So, for instance, in Germany, we had to take out a chapter of Twilight and Philosophy because they weren't interested. It was political, American-based, and they didn't care.
Right.
The Germans were, I love Germany, and I love Germans. Yeah. They're fantastic. They're just like, we don't want that.
Right.
We don't care. I'm like, okay. I have to explain to that author that she's not going to be in the book now.
Right,
but
yeah.
What can we do?
We may have to have you on International Business Radio. Coming up here, yeah. So you ever get to do any traveling or book signing in any of the countries yet?
The only places that I've done anything even remotely like that is Australia.
Oh, okay.
Because I went to University of New South Wales. It was one of the places I went to finish my doctorate. I did a transnational study between their hospital, their Prince of Wales Hospital, and hospitals in Boston and New York for female cancer patients. So,
oh my gosh.
I'm a female cancer patient. So anything that sort of touches my world, I'm a true academic. I must study it, turn
right,
it inside
yeah.
out, find out all about right. it. And then, then hopefully I can tackle something else.
Well, you're brilliant and I'm so happy to have you in
ADD.
Here. I know. That's another subject, but Rich, what else were you going to ask?
Well, we're almost out of time, so maybe just let our listeners know you're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with your host, Deb Beecham, and every Monday morning. So tune into that. And also, we maybe mention to each of our invite each of our guests to mention how folks would get in touch with them.
Yeah. How about Jennifer? You want to go first? You have your email in front of you.
Yes. You could give me a call at 404-932-8578. Or you can send me an email at jdw-associates@comcast.net.
Great. And Dr. Rebecca?
Thank you. RebeccaHousel.com and on Instagram and Twitter at Doc Housel, and of course Google Plus. I think I'm Rebecca Housel, and Facebook, Dr. Rebecca Housel. Any social media thing you can think of.
Because we are radio, how are you spelling Housel?
Ah, great. Thank you. It's house with an L on the end.
Okay.
H-O-U-S-E-L.
Nice.
L like loser. But you can't see because it's radio. That's too
like
bad.
Like liberated, yeah.
Liberated.
And she's worth following for sure. That's so if you're interested in families, children, advocating for reform, make sure you follow Jennifer Waddell. And Jennifer, what is your Twitter handle?
It is Waddell, WADDELL JDW.
Jennifer is up on all the current topics and trends in family court and well-connected across the country with other advocates. And, you know, we both have Divorce Corp in common, which I wish I had known you then when we were hosting the screening of Divorce Corp. We could have had you on our panel. And maybe we need to do a follow-up event to that as well. I think we had, Rebecca, we hadn't talked about that yet, but we had 200 people pack the LaFont Theater for the screening of a documentary about the business of divorce. And I mean, people have really been impacted to the point to go watch a documentary. And we had two or three television stations, reached a million people in Metro Atlanta on CBS alone.
Oh, wow.
And
crazy.
Then we had radio. We had, we were on 106.7 and, had something in the AJC. It was, you know, we really had a big impact. We had about 100 viewers a week on Facebook alone, just around these topics. So these are topics that people are paying attention to because it's affecting, if it's not affecting you directly, it's affecting somebody that you know. And people say, oh my gosh, if it's this bad now, what about my children and my grandchildren? Mm-hmm. So we need to do something now and keep the conversation going. So Jennifer, I appreciate having you as an expert in that area.
Yes, and I would recommend if anybody is interested in learning more about that, you can go to the divorce.com website, and there is a section on there for all of the different reform activities that are going on across the whole nation. There's a judicial reform, and there's a child support and parenting time reform committee, as well, of course, parental alienation, which is the one I'm one of the co-leaders for. So you can go check that out, and you can sign up and join and be a member, and just to see what's going on.
Yeah, that's great. So
look into
just
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
keep learning.
Yes. Quick question on that. On you mentioned at the top of the show about the American Psychiatric Association.
Yes.
They made some changes recently, or updates to, and are they? You say they're not using the term parental alienation, or
the changes that they made is called it's a DSM. It's a big published thing that they do,
right,
in that industry. And the DSM-5 category was updated recently.
What are some not without going through all the minutia or changes, but and are you saying they're not using that term? Because I know you use that term a lot on the show, and there's different takes on that, perspectives on parental alienation.
I keep saying this. I need to remember to get it on the schedule as a whole show and with different perspectives, because there's just bad behavior,
right,
in a lot of situations. And somebody may not intentionally be trying to alienate, or let's say a parent has a bad attitude,
right,
and it's rubbing off on the child. But sometimes the child is so bonded with the other parent and mature,
right,
that it doesn't affect them as much as it might affect another child. Because the child who is truly alienated,
yeah,
from the parent that they're, that, you know, let's say the mother's trying to alienate the child from the father, some children respond to that and kind of walk on eggshells around the person,
right,
trying to do the alienation. And other children let it slide off their backs and say, you know what, that's mom's problem. for acting that way. I love my dad and nothing's going to change that relationship. So that child, while the parent, while the mother in that scenario may be trying to cut off and end that relationship with the father,
right,
the child's not letting it happen. And hopefully the father is being a reasonable, you know, mature adult and just going with the flow and being there for his child, so the alienation doesn't happen. It does, just because someone's acting poorly, being emotionally abusive of the child, doesn't mean that it has to result in a ruined relationship with the other parent. Usually, a lot of times, it backfires on the parent who's behaving badly.
Yeah, because they can kind of see through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it involves a lot of education. There's a lot of study at the policy level, at the professional level, you know, and I like to come back to just common sense.
Right.
You know,
when all else fails, yeah.
When all else fails, common sense. If you are trying to undermine or interfere with your child's relationship with the other parent, regardless of what you think of the other parent, shame on you. Don't do it. It hurts your child, and it's really going to backfire on you and cause your child to lose respect for you. So on a more positive note,
okay.
On a more positive note, there are parents who are getting a lot of help with these situations and learning how to manage through it better. So we're seeing some better outcomes.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Good news, yeah. So we'll revisit this topic, I'm sure, in future shows. Unless, did you find some information? Or is that your homework assignment? Yeah.
We'll post
definitely an entire show.
Yeah, when we have the show up on the website, we'll post some links and have some follow-up discussions. So thank you so much for both being here, and enjoy the rest of your stay in Atlanta, Rebecca.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I think that, Deb, don't you think this, Jennifer, isn't she like a superhero? Could you just, like picture, you're like a superhero. You're advocating for people. But that's really what superheroes do. Aww. I think there should be a whole comic.
That is, yeah.
Maybe Nate Edmondson, who's a local, he's Atlanta, you know, he's in Macon, but he does like really great female characters.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. We should totally have him do a comic about you.
All right. Cut us off the radio so we can talk about that.
All right, we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This show is brought to you by My Advocate Center, the voice for families and family law advocates. Learn more at myadvocatecenter.com.